How accurate are the estrogen receptor assays out there? If you look at an assay result that's positive or negative, can you be pretty sure that that's the case, or are there problems with that?
There are some questions with the variability, and that's such a key distinction. I think patients asking their oncologist specifically, how sure are you that the estrogen receptor status that you say my tumor has is really correct? We know that up to 20% or so of the assays done in small community labs may be inaccurate. The results are much better if they're done in a large central reference laboratory, but it's a fairly simple test to be done. And most patients' tumors are still available. They're stored for years. So unless this was someone diagnosed 10 or 15 years ago, it's usually not difficult to send someone down to a dusty basement and find their tumor and ask for that test to be repeated just to make certain.
So the patients who have estrogen receptor positive tumors are candidates then for endocrine therapy. Can you talk more specifically about what types of endocrine therapy are used and how you make the decision in this situation?
There are a couple of different options depending on whether that woman is premenopausal or postmenopausal. So for premenopausal women, the one that is probably still used the most is tamoxifen. Now, that becomes a challenge because many of those premenopausal women, if they were diagnosed before, were probably on tamoxifen as part of their adjuvant therapy. But there are still other options for those premenopausal women, which include stopping the function of their ovaries, so their ovaries are not producing estrogen, essentially making them postmenopausal. And you can do that either by a simple surgical procedure to remove the ovaries or by giving them an injection that simply stops the ovaries from functioning.
What do you tell these younger women to expect in terms of side effects with tamoxifen and ovarian suppression?
The side effects, particularly of ovarian suppression, are really the same, whether you use the injection to stop the ovaries from functioning or you remove the ovaries, because the side effects all have to do with not having estrogen. So they're all the menopausal side effects, hot flashes, sometimes mood swings, joint aches or stiffness. Often ladies describe it best as if I feel like I've aged 10 years overnight. Which always makes me chuckle because, in essence, that's what they've done. We've made them immediately menopausal. I think it's also important for women to recognize that most young women get some of those side effects, but not everyone is miserable. Some patients have very minor problems with those, even though we've made them menopausal very quickly. For some women, those side effects are very troublesome. The other that I try to ask women about is whether they have a history of migraines, and if they do, if their migraines seemed at all related to their menstrual cycle. That becomes a little bit less predictable, but in some of those women, making them menopausal makes their migraines go away. In some, it makes their migraines better. That's one of the reasons why for many of my young patients, I recommend that we start with the injections for a few months to get a sense of how the side effects of this are for them. And if side effects are not that troublesome and they're tired of getting the injections, we can always ask a surgeon to take their ovaries out to be able to dispense with the injections. But that gives us a way of doing this almost on a trial basis. So if they're really miserable and find this just intolerable, I can stop the injections. I can't so easily put their ovaries back.
What usually happens once you start hormone therapy in this situation?
Many of those patients will continue on hormone therapies, sometimes for several years. And at times that their disease is progressing, we switch from one hormone therapy to another. What I try to explain to my patients is that at some point, even though their disease was estrogen receptor positive, our hormone therapy options will no longer be effective in controlling their disease. But it's very difficult to predict when we might reach that point. But at that point, we'll need to think about switching to chemotherapy. I also try to make sure they know I have several hormone therapy options. So the fact that their first hormone therapy option is no longer effective doesn't tell us that switching to another hormone therapy won't work for them, because often it does.
And so in these patients, you're starting out with hormonal therapy. Why are you doing that as opposed to, say, giving chemotherapy?
It goes back to the goals of their therapy. The hormone therapies generally have far fewer side effects than the chemotherapy options that we have. They're easier to administer. Most of them come in pills. There are two that come in an injection given once a month. So they don't require the same commitment of patients coming back and forth to the clinic, spending half the day in an infusion center getting an IV infusion. They don't have a lot of the side effects that patients are most troubled by or would be most visible to family members or people in their workplace or in the community. Seeing them, it almost allows patients to be incognito as a patient with metastatic breast cancer if they wish to be, which is not always possible with chemotherapy. The other thing has to do with the biology of breast cancer, and we know that breast cancers that are estrogen receptor positive are just as likely to benefit from hormone therapy as they are from chemotherapy. So if I can make your disease better or keep your disease stable with hormone therapy with fewer side effects, why would I want to give you chemotherapy now? That seems counterproductive to a goal of living as well as possible, as long as possible.